Dennis Lehane is the best-selling author of 9 previous novels, including Gone Baby Gone and Mystic River. Now Dennis is back with Live by Night, a gritty gangsta-era novel that Janet Maslin of the New York Times has called a sentence-by-sentence pleasure. Before becoming a full-time writer, Boston-born Lehane worked as a counselor with mentally challenged and abused children. He waited tables, parked cars, drove limos, worked in bookstores, and loaded tractor trailers. As he tells it, his one regret is that no one ever gave him a chance to tend bar.
Readers, I am so thrilled to introduce Dennis Lehane on the Book Report. Thanks so much for joining us today, Dennis.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Live by Night begins in Boston, travels to Tampa, and next to Havana. Why these cities?
It's the rum route, actually, in reverse. That was actually the first plan I ever had for the book was to, rum came out of Havana across the Florida Straits, was often entered through the section of Tampa called Ybor City, and then was trucked across to Jacksonville and run up the Eastern Seaboard to Boston, New York, etc. So I knew that I was going to start the book in Boston, and then I was going to go backwards, and I was going to go have my main character end up running a little fiefdom in Tampa, and then have the denouement of the book occur in Cuba. Wind it down.
You write, the night has its own set of rules. Is that why the book is called Live by Night?
Yeah, it is. Partially that, and partially the idea that during Prohibition, the vast majority of people lived by night. The vast majority of people broke the law. The vast majority of people turned their back on conventional mores and conventional society. I mean, that's what I called it, the Roaring Twenties, because it was rocking.
Yeah. The main character, of course, is Joe Coughlin, and his dad was a cop. I thought that the way you wrote the father-son relationship was amazing. Can you tell the readers about that?
Well, yeah, they're father and son. Joe was a sort of accident to the marriage. He was the youngest of a family of three, and his father is a quite respected and quite powerful deputy superintendent of the Boston Police Department. And Joe has always rejected everything about him, even though paradoxically they love each other very much and are very much alike. But Joe has said, you know, he knows that his father is, for all his respectability, quite corrupt. And he has turned his back on anything that has the sort of veneer of respectability without the actuality of it. And so he says, I'm just going to be a straight-up outlaw. And I'm not going to pretend to be anything else.
I'm sorry. He differentiates between being an outlaw and a gangster. How does he see the difference?
Well, the distinction he makes is that, you know, that an outlaw is essentially somebody who just doesn't, has no desire to play by the rules of society. It's simple as that. What a gangster is somebody who, in some ways, is indistinguishable from what he dislikes about his father. I mean, the gangster is the outlaw gone corporate. So an outlaw is somebody who lives on the margins. A gangster is somebody who creates an illegal company, essentially. And then adheres to all the rules in a way of a society, which Joe has no interest in, or he thinks he has no interest in. But as the book progresses, the line between gangster and outlaw gets very blurred.
Yeah. I loved how you wrote about Joe's attachment to his father's watch. Talk about that a little bit.
His father at one point took his watch, and it's a watch that had extreme significance to his father. It was given to him after rescuing somebody from a robbery many years before. And so, but even that story, one of the things that you see repeated over and over and over again in the book is that behind the legend, the truth is very different. And so the story behind the watch, as Joe understands it, isn't even the true story. It's something that he carries through the book and becomes very much a metaphor for other things, which I don't believe is that's for the reader to figure out what those are.
Okay. Some of the mobsters in the book, I'm wondering if they were based on actual people, or, for example, I love the name Mean Mo Mullen. Did you create that, or were they based on real folks?
No, I created that. Everybody had names like that back then, or at least they did in the literature, as I understand. It's very Damien, it's Runyon-esque is the way they put it. Damien Runyon was a great writer at that time, and all people always had crazy names like Mean Joe Mullins in his stories. And you look back at the comic strips of the time, and you look back at the gangster movies of the time, and everybody had these really wild and colorful monikers. So I used those when I could. Although Joe's a very simple name. He's just Joe Coughlin, and the man he works for is Masso Pescatore, and the chief enemy is a man named Albert White. So those guys don't have nicknames, but a lot of people in the book pop around with these odd and strange names, because I was trying to give you the spice of the time, the flavor of the time.
Yeah. There's a question that runs through the book. Can good deeds follow bad money? Tell us how you handled that.
Well, it's a question. It's a question I think we all grapple with. There's no Balzac line, behind every fortune is a crime. And I think that we've been questioning it the last 10 years. Certainly, that's the underlying question of gunboat diplomacy. Can you go and blow a country up for its own good, and then rebuild it? And some countries are very much better off, but would they prefer to have free choice? It's a question that goes back to the Romans. The Romans came in and gave all these civilizations that they overran. They gave them water, they gave them crops, they gave them farming systems, they gave them irrigation, they gave them sanitation. And yet at the same time, they killed a lot of people to do it. So that just becomes the question of the book. Joe is thinking in terms of what he has done. By the end, there's a lot of dead bodies because Joe Coughlin exists. And yet he retains this part of his heart that wants to do good. And then he is, by this point, involved very heavily with a Cuban woman. And she is representative of a country that was, at that point, very much under the foot of American power. So it became her interpretation of whether you can do it or not is very different than his.
Yeah. And of course, Graciela does a lot of good in her community in many different ways.
Yes. She is constantly trying to fight against what may be partially a truth of her, which is that she has become what she's most concerned with is becoming a cafe rebel. Somebody who sits around and talks about revolution in cafes who doesn't do anything about it. And once she falls for Joe, she loses a little bit of her edge. And so then she begins to turn that into philanthropy.
Yeah. Live by Night is not a sequel of The Given Day, but there is a connection. Will the characters in Live by Night continue in any future books?
Yes, they'll be in the next book, some of them.
Ah, all right.
The idea is to continue looking at the bloodline, but not necessarily feel as if, I don't want anybody to ever feel, any reader to ever feel as if they're missing something when they read one of the books, if they haven't read the others. So you can read Live by Night and never even know The Given Day existed. And that's very purposeful, because then if you did know it existed, or you find out it existed, you go, oh, I wonder what these characters were like 10 years earlier.
So are you already writing the next book?
Yeah, I'm well into it.
Uh-huh. And are there any plans for a movie of Live by Night?
Yeah, Live by Night has been optioned, right at this moment, Ben Affleck is set to write and direct the adaptation.
Wow. So when might that make it to the big screen?
I have no idea. Could be next year, could be 10 years.
I want to tell the readers that this was a book that I read in a day and a half because I couldn't put it down. And you really kind of captured a sense of time and place. I loved it.
Thank you. It's wonderful to hear.
Well, you're very welcome. And readers, you want to either get the audio version right away or pick this one up. Thanks so much for joining us today.